Hi, this is Johnny Eccles from Love, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcasts.
Pantheon Podcasts presents from Hollywood, California, The Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman. You are invited to join the Hollywood princess as she explores her lifelong pursuits in the occult, sex, love, and that sinful rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, step into the dark parlor of Pleasant Gaiman as she brings you The Devil's Music.
Hi, this is Pleasant Gaiman. Welcome to The Devil's Music, a Pantheon podcast where rock and roll meets the occult. For those of you that don't know me, I do a lot of stuff. I'm a dancer, actor, tarot reader, and a best-selling author with 8 books out. I got one on the way, too. Look for my new memoir, Rock and Roll Witch, on Punk Hostage Press. You might have seen me acting or dancing in music videos, feature films, and documentaries. In fact, look for me in the new Go-Go's doc. To find out more about me or to book a tarot reading, please go to pleasantgaiman.com or check out my Instagram, Princess of Hollywood. All one word, baby. I post there a lot. I'm really happy to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Everyone at Pantheon tells stories about the music we love so much. There's like 50 podcasts. Find them all on Pantheon, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio.com, Pandora, anywhere you get your favorite podcast fix. Head on over to PantheonPodcast.com and share a show with a friend. Or I'll put a spell on you, baby. Welcome to the Devil's Music Podcast. How are you guys all doing? Today we have a fantastic guest. She's one of my best friends for many, many years. We lived together at probably the most famous punk rock house, not just in LA, not just in America, but in the world. Iris Berry and I lived at Disgraceland, which was mentioned in Rolling Stone, in Spin. It's been in John Doe and Tom DeSavia's books, More Fun in the New World and Under the Big Black Sun. And it also is on, legit on, the Hollywood Maps to the Stars homes because of all the people that used to hang out and party with us back in the day. So aside from being one of my roommates, Iris Berry is just an unbelievable, talented writer, publisher and founder of Punk Hostage Press. She's an actor. She's been in movies you may have seen, including cult hits from the 80s, like every rock and roll movie you can imagine from the 80s, Iris was in. She was also in Border Radio, directed by Allison Anders in a role. She had a band called the Lame Flames. You're going to hear some of that later in the podcast. And Iris and I were in a couple of different bands, most notably the Ringling Sisters, which also featured Dave Catching. And we were all together in the Ringling Sisters. And then Iris also was an occasional member of my white trash X-rated country music band that Dave Catching was also in, called Honk If You're Horny. So Iris has had a long and illustrious career. She's got a lot of fans. She's sitting here cracking up while I'm introducing her because
Wait till you guys hear all the fucking sick stories that we have to tell. And you will be asking yourself, how are they still alive?
Exactly.
You're hearing Iris's laugh before I even introduce her. But please welcome the illustrious Iris Berry. Hi, babe. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you? It's so hard. It is pretty hard to believe that we're still alive.
I know.
Something in the water. Like, there must have been something in the water, Disgrace.
Yeah. Okay. But before we start telling the story that everyone that's listening came for, let's talk about Punk Hostage Press. Iris is the co-founder and publisher of Punk Hostage Press, which it's due to its great quality, but it's gotten such notoriety as being one of the foremost indie presses in America, if not the world, because the stable of authors you have, including me, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, no, it is incredible. So why don't you tell all the listeners about Punk Hostage and tell them, like, you know, who some of the most noted authors are and also what you got coming up for 2021 and beyond.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, Punk Hostage Press is, it's one of those things that's just, it has a life of its own. And it's pretty much, you know, Razor and I started in 2012 on Friday the 13th of January. And, you know, we're 9 years old now. And there's you, and you're coming out with your book, Rock and Roll Witch, which is very exciting. And there's Jack Grisham, who's got another book coming out very shortly called Pulse of the World, Arthur Chance, Punk Rock Detective. And also
that's Jack's new book?
Yeah.
Arthur Chance, Punk Rock Detective?
Yeah.
How do I not know this? Okay, wait a minute. I just have to say this. I know I'm probably being redundant, but for any of you guys listening, in case you do not know who Jack Grisham is, he's the legendary Jack Grisham. He was in TSOL. He was
is in TSOL. He's still.
Yes. He found the number. And then what were his other bands? I'm slipping my mind because I'm old and senile.
Joy Killer. He had Joy Killer. He had, now I'm slipping too.
Okay, well, just Google it. It's Jack Lloyd.
Yeah, just Google it.
We don't have time for this shit. Jack, we love you.
Yeah, we love you, Jack. But yeah, so his book's coming out like any minute now alongside of yours, a Punk Rock Detective, Arthur Chance. It's so freaking good. And
you
then
right away, you can say fucking here, say it. Fucking.
Oh, right. Say fucking. It. It's so fucking good. And so along with your book, Rock and Roll Witch, a memoir of sex, magic, drugs, and rock and roll, which is also so fucking good. We have Vag Moore's book, who was in the Dwarves, and his book's called My Life with the Dwarves, How I Drank, Fought, and Fucked My Way Around the World. So all three of those books are coming out, like, to, you know, one after the other. So that's super exciting. Yeah. And so, you know, just
stay tuned. That's a trifecta of psychosis right there.
Well, just the fact that we've got, okay, Vag is a Satanist, you're a witch, and Jack's a hypnotist. We could just do, like, you guys should just go on tour. I mean, when we can. But in the meantime, we can have very special Zooms, you know, and seance and satanic rituals and hypnotize people.
I need to invite Jack on this show and have him just hypnotize me. Cluck like a chicken.
He already did. You just don't remember.
Oh, wait, you mean there wasn't really a pandemic? Was that just my hypnotic?
What pandemic? I don't know what you're talking about. So that's all super, super exciting. And you want to hear this, plus, because when Jack's book comes out, he's going to do a secret Zoom. I know that sounds bizarre, but everyone, you just need to wait and look for the details, because it's going to be pretty top secret. And, you know, where those who buy their books and he signed them will get a code to come. It's going to be
pretty good. Oh, my God. Is it going to, I was going to ask if it was like a treasure hunt or something.
I don't know. Maybe.
Like an treasure hunt.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone's Zoom, just getting.
Right. Zoom reading / treasure hunt.
Getting filmed for the NSA and the fucking the right wings like authors to boycott.
Yeah. All right. So yeah. So that's what's going on. And there's some other books like Dan Denton's book, $100 a Week Motel, which is amazing. Dan lives in Toledo, and you're going to do the Zoom
Toledo, Ohio.
Us. Yeah, he's from Toledo, Ohio.
Oh,
and he's
so
totally
still,
one of us.
You can still get like Section 8 motels for $100 a week up there.
I don't know if you still can. Maybe it's 150, but yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And the book's sick. It's so great. And you're going to love it, Plez. And, you know, anyone else who gets their hands on it. So yeah, January 31st, we're doing that reading, his launch party on the 31st for that. For $100 a week motel. And then we have Joel Landmine's Think Change, Razor's book, Puro Purismo, and I don't know.
Scotty's
so
book,
many.
The one like Bitches Love Convicts.
Yeah. Burden of Concrete. Sorry.
Wait, say it again. Say it again.
Burden of Concrete.
Oh, I thought you said cockery.
That's his next book. Oh my God. So yeah, that's Scotty's book, Burden of Cockery.
Bitches Love Convicts.
That's his next book, Bitches Love Convicts.
Yeah, this book, just so the listeners know, it's about his healing from drug addiction and spending time in jail, but somehow Iris and I, especially me, went OCD on a line he just said that was in one of his stories, which, that when he was getting out of jail and he was unsure of what to expect, one of the other inmates took him aside and said, "Don't worry, bitches love convicts."
It's true. No, I already got it.
Wait, both of us bitches have loved too convicts.
Many, yeah, we are women who have loved convicts.
Iris and I both are people that somehow in our dating history, # not making this up, have dated multiple bank robbers just accidentally. We were punk rock girls that wound up dating bank robbers. Go figure.
Well, those were the days when you could rob a bank and not get caught, because there was, once upon a time, kids, there was no cameras. And you could go into a bank, you could pull up in front, rob the bank, get in your getaway car and take off and not get caught.
Yeah, there was also no ATM, so you had to physically go into the bank to rob.
Yeah, it was a lot harder. You had to do the physical work.
The musical interlude. Those were the days, my friends. No, I'm just kidding. Right now we're going to play something by Iris and Mai's band, the Ringling Sisters. And Iris Berry wrote this song. It's called 60 Watt Reality.
60 Watt Reality. Softball. Dim the lights. If he don't want to, he don't have to. See. The way it really is.
Okay, Iris, here we are back again.
There's also another book that I need to tell you about. We're doing the Mark Rudd book. Yeah, we're doing the Mark Rudd book. I'm doing it along with
Mad Mark Rood. Tell everybody who he was in case some people don't know.
Mad Mark Rood in the 80s was the, he was an amazing artist. He did the stippling art, and he did everyone's album covers. He did all the flyers. He did the Horseheads' famous first record of the beautiful Horseheads. He did the Fiesta lettering on Swinger Sonic's record. He did everything.
His t-shirts and flyers are very collectible now. His name was Mark Rood, but everyone called him Mad Mark Rood, and he was an incredible artist. And he also lived with us, or mostly lived with Iris and I, because he was living in sin with Iris at Disgraceland. If you call that living, that was living, baby. So Iris and I are going to tell you a couple of the more choice stories from Disgraceland. And I've written about some of them. And there's a chapter in More Fun in the New World that I wrote about Hollywood 80s punk. And it's Disgraceland is prominently featured in here. But Iris, why don't you start off telling your favorite memories of our house?
Okay. First of all, I just want everyone to know that there were no cell phones. For those who don't know, for you youngins, we didn't have cell phones, and we had one landline at Disgraceland, and it was in Pleasance Room, and we had the 213 number, 213-460-4890, right?
Yes. Right.
Okay, so, and then, we were both in
bands.
Everyone
in town, the drunk dial, especially from on tour, we'd get collect calls from people drunk dialing that had it committed to memory.
Or in jail. On tour or in jail? Okay, so it was, but the thing is, Pleasant and I were both in bands, and we were both on the phone all the time, or talking to people, or getting people, putting people on the guest list or whatever. And so I got my own phone in the room because we just needed,
Our phone.
Yeah, finally. And so we just got into this habit of, like, one time I knew Pleasant was on the phone. And so literally I was hungover in my bed at the end of the hall, and I called her. I made an emergency breakthrough.
Okay, so I have to explain emergency breakthroughs to people. Like, this was a thing where you could, for free, if there was a legit emergency, which we used for anything, this was like if you needed, technically it was there in case you needed an ambulance or something, in case there was a busy signal on the line, because in those days there wasn't even call waiting. But we would just use it when we just wanted to use the phone, which is why they started charging people a quarter to make emergency breakthroughs.
Yeah, a big quarter. Yeah. But, and so
you did do an emergency breakthrough a couple of times, but there was this one time when you called me. Iris, we were laying in bed so fucking hungover, 15 feet down the hallway from each other, the phone rang, and I was like, I could barely, roll over and get it. I was so hungover. And it was an operator's voice saying, is this 213-460-4890? Are you willing to accept a collect call from Iris Berry? And I stared at the phone, like, wow, is that acid I took still in my system? But of course I accepted it. And collect calls were really expensive to make. But so then it was like our regular habit to just call each other.
Down the hall. In the same house.
Too hungover to get out of bed.
That was the high point. And then there was, remember when we discovered cigarette loads and we would plant them in each other's cigarette boxes in the house?
Tell everyone what they are. You have to tell people what they are, because I don't know if they know this.
Okay,
shit.
Cigarette loads. Okay, me and Pleasant and Laura and Mike Mart and Steve-O, we would walk down to Hollywood Boulevard and
From Tex on the Horsehead, Steve-O from the Vandals.
From the Vandals, and Laura from Hard as Nails, Cheap as Dirt, and the Screaming Sirens. We were all living together at that time, and we'd go down to Hollywood Boulevard, and go to the magic stores and buy these things called cigarette loads. And what you do is you put them in cigarettes. So when someone goes to smoke it, it explodes. Right.
Like a joke. It was a novelty item, but accepting.
Yeah,
I don't think it's not a
terrorist item.
You weren't supposed to put like 5 or 6 of them in cigarettes the way that we did. And then we'd always get so drunk that like we would turn like the loaded cigarettes upside down or move them to a certain side of the cigarette pack. But then as soon as we started drinking at places like the Frolic Room or the Firefly or the Soundcheck where Iris and I both worked, we'd forget like what cigarettes had loads in them. So we'd light up a cigarette for ourselves and then it would be exploding like the 4th of July in our faces.
And people would think a gun went off. Like,
yeah.
It was like the wild, wild west. But, or we'd be at home and I would be in my room. And all of a sudden I hear this, wow, wow. And you'd be like, Iris, did you do that? Like you couldn't believe it. Yeah, that was a normal day at Disgraceland. Cigarette loads. People playing craps.
Day drinking. Yeah, Mike Mark from Tux and the Horseheads had a professional crap table that just lived on, it lived on our coffee table. And every night, I swear to God, like anyone you could think of in rock and roll Hollywood was sitting there playing craps with us and betting like their guitars, their real guitars, like a vintage Gibson guitar or like a bass amp or like car keys. I mean, this was like really high stakes betting and then it would get claimed. But I remember one time someone won Mike Mart's guitar, but then he couldn't give it to them right away because it was still in the pawn shop. when people came off, when like the gas company or the electric company came to turn off our utilities because we hadn't paid, we'd make them come in and roll dice with us first. And one time I remember Joe Wood from PSOL was like passed out across the front door, like he hadn't made it to the door. He was going to go back home to Cerritos, but he just passed out. And so when the guy from the gas company was coming to shut the gas off, we told him to come in and play craps with us first. And then the door was open a crack and he had to step over Jim and he sat down at the dice table and we told him it was his role and he was getting ready and then all of a sudden he looked over at the front door and he's like, is that guy okay?
Okay, wait, I have a Jim Wood story. I just want to, okay, this is a normal day at Disgraceland. This is how I met Joe. Okay, and when I first moved into Disgraceland, I needed a job. And Pleasant was like, why don't you bartend? And I said, I don't know how to bartend. And she's like, sure you do. What's in a vodka tonic? And I'm like, vodka and tonic? She's like, yeah. What's in a screwdriver? I'm like, orange juice and vodka? Yeah, see, you can bartend. And she was booking the Cafe de Grand then. And the owner, Michael Brennan.
It was a huge punk club.
One of the first punk clubs in Hollywood, like up there. Okay, so, and she knew that... they needed a bartender. So she went and talked to Michael and got me the job. She said, oh yeah, my friend Iris, she's really experienced as a bartender. And so Texacala Jones was my cocktail waitress and you were my cocktail waitress, right? Weren't you?
Yeah, we were both either bartending or cocktail waitressing. And Tex was only a cocktail waitress, even though she spent most of her time laying in the parking lot smoking weed with her tray on her stomach.
Exactly. Just another day. And so this one day, it was a Sunday. There was a thing that Bob Forrest was putting on called the Sunday Club. And across the street was a baseball diamond and all the guys from like the Horseheads and the Joneses and, you know, Jeffrey Lee Pierce and, you know, Top Jimmy, they were playing.
Love Circus. Yeah. Anybody you can think of. Like
they
all
were
the
playing
band.
Softball. And it was, I can't even believe they got through a game because they were all so drunk.
Well, and the girls that would play too, like there were so many girls that like wound up, you know, doing not a walk of shame, but a waltz down Hollywood Boulevard and then down Argyle to get to Rodney's, still in the same clothes they had on last night, running the bases in like high heeled over the knee spike heels, you know, boots, you know, like,
yeah. That was a normal day. That was a normal day.
Because Bob Forrest, who was in, you know, one of the founding members of Thelonious Monster and is now known as Rehab Bob. And because of these days we're talking about, got sober. but his first booking of the Sunday club was he came to me and said he wanted to do a club during the daytime on Sundays. And so the first bill had the Bengals and Black Flag. It was the Bengals opening for Black Flag. Like he would always just pick bands that were completely not the same, and it always worked. And this was like the one time when everybody in the music scene could just come together, get shit-faced, play softball in the parking lot across the street, and then pass out in the gutter in front of the club.
And not only did Bob have the Sunday club, Top Jimmy had Blue Mondays. Remember Blue Mondays? Like he would be downstairs and he had like Tom Waits or Dave Lee Roth. And that place was packed. It was amazing. So I was bartending on my first shift. And like, first of all, Top Jimmy comes sliding into the bar and he wants beer. And he just like throws down to pay for his beer with postage stamps. And I was like, dude, I'm new here. Like, really? And so I asked.
Oh, Michael, you didn't know that. I knew that. And Michael Brennan knew it, but you didn't know it yet.
I didn't know. And so Michael's like, yeah, just let him. And then
Michael Brennan had it figured out. He's like, yeah, one bourbon and Coke for Jimmy is 4 stamps. Don't take less. Don't take 3. Don't take 2. Only take 4 stamps. Because Jimmy had broken into the stamp machine at the building that Bob Forrest lived in, and he thought he had it calculated so he could get all the cash out of it. The La Leyenda, which is a classic old Hollywood apartment building that now is like, you know, really upscale, but in those days it was a dump that Bob Forrest and Flea and Anthony all shared an apartment, Flea and Anthony from the Chili Peppers. But so Jimmy robbed the postage machine and he thought he had it figured out, so it was the end of the month with the cash, but they had taken all the cash out and there was a whole brand new wheel of postage stamps in there. So Jimmy just brought the wheel back to the ground. He wanted to sell it to Michael and Michael said no, but then Michael said he could pay for drinks with postage stamps until it ran out.
Okay, so that happens. And I'm like, okay, I'm starting to figure this place out. He can pay with postage stamps. And then this really cute guy comes up and he looked like he's having a rough day. And he's like, yeah, I just need a whiskey. And I was like, okay, that'll be like, I don't know, 4 something. And he just throws down like all these pennies. And I look at Michael and he goes, yeah. And so, you know, the day goes on. And then all the bands are playing downstairs. All you guys are downstairs and I'm still up top. And Top Jimmy and Jeffrey Lee Pierce are spinning records upstairs in the same room as me. And they'd spin like one country record and then one metal record. And it just kept getting louder and louder. And so I'd walk up to them going, hey, you guys, I can't even hear people's orders. Can you just lower it? And every time I asked them to lower it, they made it louder. And then they would laugh. And they would laugh at me. And I literally was reading lips at the bar trying to figure out people's orders. And finally, I couldn't take it. So I walked over there and I said, you guys, lower the fucking music. And they laughed again. So I had a full pitcher of beer and I just poured it on both turntables and they looked so horrified and like smoke came out. And I said, I told you to lower the fucking music. And then I just walked away and obviously, they couldn't spin records anymore. But okay. So then I get home to Disgraceland, exhausted. And the guy that bought the whiskey with pennies was crashed out on our couch. And I'm like, Plez, who is that guy? She's like, that's Joe Wood. He's the new singer for TSOL. I'm like, I just served him at the bar. So it was, our life was like Mayberry. Like we all knew each other and everywhere we went, we were there.
Wait, do you know how I met Joe Wood? I met Joe Wood with, some people know, Jerry Hurtado as Skate Master Tate. He did sort of hip hop and rapping skate rock songs that were featured on the Thrasher compilations. And actually the Velvet Margarita Cantina, which is now closed because of the pandemic, like everything else. But
so sad. Love that place.
Carlos Adley, the owner.
And Ava. Big Daddy.
They named the patio out there. It's the Skate Master Tate Memorial patio. But anyhow, I was at some party in Huntington Beach and and Skate Master Tape was there. Everybody was there. And somehow, I don't even know how, this was how I met Joe Wood a few, you know, a little bit before you did. And I knew he was the new singer of TSOL. And somehow, I don't even remember how this started, but we were standing, me and Taters went up this tree. Oh, because he didn't want anyone to steal his weed. So we went up into a tree. So we climbed up into this giant tree and we were sitting on a branch getting high. And then the branch broke. And Taters fell there. I mean, this is like a high up there branch, right? In the middle of a raging party. Taters like bounced off in one direction, but I landed directly on top of Joe Wood.
He's like, hey, baby, come here often.
Okay.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that was crazy. But now let's talk about some of our roommates. So two of our most notorious roommates at Disgraceland, even though we had everybody you could think of staying there, crashing there, partying there, sometimes for days or weeks at a time, like touring
months,
bands.
Months. Through.
Yeah. This was a decade long reign of punk rock insanity. But two of the roommates that were the most insane were Mike Mart from Tex and the Horseheads and Steve-O of the Vandals, the first lead singer of the Vandals. So one of the wildest stories I remember was my band, the Screamin' Sirens, were on tour and we were playing with the Horseheads and Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Mm. The night that we were supposed to get back to LA. So me and Laura Bennett, my bass player, drove on speed, like all the way through from like Austin to Hollywood. And when we came into the house, like days later, still wired so hard that I was surprised we had teeth left. Steve-O and Mike Mart were wearing every fucking piece of leopard clothing and shoes and accessories like hats and little capes and button clip-on earrings from the 50s, all in leopard. And Steve-O was still kind of awake, but Mike Mart was passed out.
But it was all my and your clothes.
Yeah, it was all of our clothes.
All of our clothes, yeah. Anything leopard. Do you mind if we dance with your face?
And Snake and Mr. Cool went down to the booty bar to play they had some pool.
Mike had on like this like leopard cloche hat of irises and a leopard capelet from the 50s. And also he had your leopard Fredericks of Hollywood spike heels with his giant feet with like the lumberjack socks crammed into it. But he also had, he had a fast food container dumped over his head with like a tomato covering one eye like a pirate eye patch. He was totally passed out. And Steve-O from the Vandals and Clam Lynch, an artist who that Iris had discovered under a fucking parked car on Melrose Avenue. He told him to come home one night and suddenly he'd been living there for months. Anyway, they were talking in fake Chinese and doing fake Kung Fu when we walked into the house. And then Laura and I couldn't sleep and we kicked everybody out, especially since we had a big gig that night. And neither one of us could sleep, and we were high out of our mind on speed. Mm. So then finally we decided to get up, and Laura yells at me from the other room, "Hey, do you have a vibrator?" And I was like, "No." "Why?" And she's like, "I don't have one either." And then I was like, "Are we going to get them?" And she said, "Yes." And so then I was sitting there looking for this trench coat I had, thinking I should wear a trench coat if we were going to go to a sex shop and buy vibrators. And then she fucking appears at my door in a trench coat and like a detective hat. And we both had on sunglasses like Ray-Bans. And we walked up to the store to buy vibrators. So when we'd never been in a porn shop before. We didn't know what vibrators are supposed to look like. And on the way there, I was like, we're not going to get like some big, like black, like giant rubber dildo or something. I mean, she goes, oh, no, no, no. You know, just like the cream colored personal massager one. But we both brought like our whole pay from Encore because we didn't know how much there was. We didn't know. Like, and so we walk into the sex store and there was this sleazy hippie with the gray ponytail. And he goes, how can I help you, ladies? And then she says all casually, like, we're at May Company shopping for a business suit. She's like, yes, we'd like to see your personal massagers. I was like, oh, all of my ratings are here. And so they cost something like $1.99 or $2.99 or $3.99. I don't remember how much, but even that wasn't astronomical. We thought it was going to be like really expensive, like $20 or something, which in those days was like $100, because this is how uneducated we were about sex toys. So,
which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
But
we didn't need toys. We had boy toys.
Yeah.
In every city. Yeah. So then when they were so cheap, we both just looked at each other like it was a rehearsed scene in a movie and said, we have to get one for Iris. And Iris was always getting so much action. She always had a million men all the time. You know, she always had a string of boys like drooling over her, which I'm still certain happens to this day. Aww. But so Iris wasn't home, and we left one in a plain brown paper sack on this little table in front of her locked bedroom door at this gray standing. It said, from your secret admirer. And then Laura and I went back and tried the vibrators, and they were so fucking noisy, like all the neighbors could hear them. I was like, but then all of a sudden I heard this like, no way, coming from the living room. And then I was like, what just happened? And then I was like, but that went on all afternoon until we had to play with Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and then it just progressed. So
okay, so then wait, this is where I come in, right?
Hello America, this is Lotus Lane and the Lane Flames. We want to sing to you a little sexual problem we've been having. We know you can relate to it. Forget it, girls. Too tall. Too small. Catch my drift.
Exactly, okay, so, where you come in. Okay. A week had gone by of nonstop coming.
And I didn't
know you weren't home.
And I didn't. And I had no idea about any of this.
We bumped into them.
I had no idea about them. They were named.
We called
them.
Their vibrators them. Like, and we were at the point of saying, I wish we could take them on tour with us.
Because it was so crazy. Like, I was probably at Mark's house for the week, but I had on my door, which was at the end of a very long, deep red hallway, I had a padlock on the outside of my door and a padlock on the inside of my door. So double protection. So you guys couldn't get in, and I had like a table outside my door, and you left the brown paper bag on the table. And it said from your secret admirer, but it looked like a crazy serial killer had written it, because it was like in pen, and it was like a pen that barely worked, and it said from your secret admirer for Iris. And so when I came home, I saw that, and I was like, oh, giddy. And I went in my room and I opened it. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like, what is this? Like, a message to go fuck yourself? Like, what? And so, so I just threw it under my bed, and then like a week later, Pleasant and Laura are like, so do you like what we got you? And I go, what? And they go, didn't you get it?
We asked you at the Frolic Room at the most famous bar in Hollywood. We finally bumped into you after a week later. Okay, wait, we're gonna take a musical interlude right now. Maybe we should probably play Super Freak here.
I think it's appropriate.
Because she's the kind of girl you read about in New Wave magazine. Okay, we'll be right
really
back.
To taste her.
Really love to taste her. Okay, now we're really going to be right back.
She's a very kinky girl, the kind you don't think come to my vibe. She will never let your spirits down once you get her off the street.
Oh, girl.
She likes the boys in the band. She says that I'm her all-time favorite. When I make my move to her room, it's the right time. She's never hard to please. Oh, no. That girl is pretty wild, no.
The girl's a super freak.
The kind of girl you read about.
New Way magazines.
That girl is pretty kinky.
The girl's a super freak.
I really love to taste her.
Okay, here we come back again. Three's not a crowd to her, she said. Room 714, I'll be waiting. Okay, take it away.
Okay, so at the Frolic Room, you guys literally corner me in the bar, like with these really big eyes, just wanting to know if I like it. I'm like what? And you're like, didn't you get it? The vibrator, I go, that was from you guys? And you're like, yeah, it's great. You got to do it. What'd you do? Then I put it under my bed. And you're like, oh, you've got to do it. And so then what? A month goes by. We hadn't talked about it. And I was in my room with Rat's Ass.
Okay, wait. Tell them who Rat's Ass is. Iris's boyfriends always had the best names.
Rat's Ass was the singer of Tales of Terror. And at this point in time, he was singing for a band called Pirates of Venus. And they were amazing. They're both amazing bands. So Raz and I were holed up in my room for a really long time. And, you know, we were messing around. It was like 5 or 5:30 or 6 in the morning. We were messing around with the vibrator. And there was a window above my bed and it was wide open. And the vibrator
faced a convent because we lived right behind the Blessed Sacrament Church in Hollywood, which is still there. And they had a kindergarten through 8th school, and right across the street in the other direction was another elementary school. But the Iris's room faced the fucking convent. And then this happened.
So then the vibrator flies out the window and it's on and it's buzzing. And I'm like, shit. So I just throw a robe on, like some crazy, or a shirt, wrap myself around, and I'm going down the driveway, chasing it down the driveway as it's rolling and buzzing and bumping down our very long driveway. And there's kids out there, like on their big wheels, looking at me like I'm a crazy lady. And I finally get my hands on it right before it gets to the street, you know. And it must have been like 6:37. And I get back in the room and I was laughing about it with Rat's Ass. And then I see you guys later and I'm like, you're not going to believe what happened. And you're like making fun of me and laughing about it. You can't believe that I chased it down the driveway. I can't believe I chased it down the driveway. And so then you're like, oh, we're playing a gig later at Raji's. And I said, oh, cool. And you're like, are you coming? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And you're like, oh no, you're coming. If you don't come, I'm going to tell that story from the stage. And then you guys are on and I'm like running through the crowd going, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here.
Oh yeah, that was like Moses parting the Red Sea. You were like, waving your arms.
Hold the presses, I'm here. Because you would have told that story from the stage.
I would have, but now just think what now, like 35 or 38 years later, we're telling it to everybody who's listening.
In the world.
In front of God and everybody.
God's given up on us.
That vibrator incident was probably what originally caused the pandemic. Fuck a lab in Wuhan. It was what Iris did in the 80s. Okay, so now that we're on the concept of sexual experiences in the 80s, please tell everyone about your band Lotus Lame and the Lame Flames. Tell them what you guys wore. Tell them who your manager was. This is so insane. They were the best band. I mean, just the the unsung sheroes of the Hollywood music scene.
We were, okay, there was, it first started with Lotus, and Lotus was Lotus Lame of the Lame Flames. And she, you know, for some reason left town and went to Florida. So I got, you know, Mandy and Lisa were the only ones left, and they asked if I wanted to join the band. Because I had the Red Thunderbird, they said, we're going to have you be in the band because you have that cool car. That's 63 Red Thunderbird. Yeah. And so the Lame Flames, you know, it was three piece, and we had a backup band, and we wore jock straps, like dyed red jock straps that we'd bedazzled over fishnet stockings and, like, you know, little black tank tops. And we had songs that, like, were called Bad Sex, Boy with Bedroom Eyes. And then we even did sort of a cover, you know, Sound of the Men Working on the Chain Gang. But we changed it. That's the Sound of the Men Working on the Lame Flames. And we were playing every club in town. And we had, like, a residency at the Coconut Teaser. And eventually Ricky Rackman, who was
MTV fame, MTV DJ fame, and like the Headbangers Ball and the Cat House.
He had a club called the Cat House. He approached us, and he became our manager, basically. And yeah, it was wild. I mean, you and we played together, the Screaming Sirens and the Lame Flames. We played together. We played.
That was the sluttiest night in town.
Welcome to the Slut Ball. That's what that was. Forget Headbangers Ball.
Don Balls, the drummer of the Germs, used to call the Screaming Sirens, he used to call us the Semen Siphons.
That wasn't in joke, and now we're telling the world. No. Yeah, Don Bowles.
I still got my teeth.
Okay, wait, let me just say, Don Bowles, he can say whatever he wants, but he lived in our driveway in a van with a license plate number that said 666, and he ran extension cords from his van into my room in the back that faced the convent so he could get up, set his alarm clock, and get up in time in the morning to go to his job at the LA Weekly.
But also, we had so many people in tour vehicles or Don Bowles' van just living in our driveway. It was like
the one time. Remember what Ross said?
Yes.
Our landlord.
Wait, I have to tell them who our landlord was. Our landlord was Mickey Hargate, who was married to Jane Mansfield and was in the movie. He was the bodybuilder in the movie, The Girl Can't Help It.
He's Mariska Hargitay's dad, who's in Law and Order.
Yeah, Mariska Hargitay's dad. But so, when our landlord used to send the manager over all the time, and then we got this, we were always late with the rent, and then we got this note saying, also, there's hippies or whatever living in the van in your driveway.
And clean up the porch because it looks like a goddamn saloon. There, oh, that's exactly, that was it, verbatim, word for word, hippies or whatever, and clean up the goddamn porch because it looks like a goddamn saloon.
that was our aesthetic, though.
I know, they nailed it.
Okay, wait, what about the time that see, nothing ever worked in disguise. On one time, the washing machine was overflowing after a party that, like, I can't even remember who was at that party. The replacements were at the party.
Oh, yeah.
One of the Stinson brothers sat on the washing machine and the dryer or did something on it, and then the next day it wasn't working. So Iris and I woke up to these gurgling and splashing noises. Again, we were really
flooded. Yeah, it was flooded.
I mean, flooded, like, not just water on the floor. It was like the shit was floating in the kitchen. But that
was like 6 inches of water.
That was probably the only time that we ever mopped the floor there, though.
Yeah. But we were mopping the floor, and there was pictures, our own photos that were, like, in the LA Weekly, like, floating by. Like,
yeah, and we were mopping it with, like, paper towels, then real towels, then blankets off the bed. And then at one point it was with our leopard coats.
The horror.
And I called the landlord and I said, hello, Ross.
bread hugging a frog while I'm washing my sweaty.
For real, she did that. I like it was yesterday. And he just responded like it was a normal phone call.
Yes. Or maybe something's wrong with their line. I'm surprised the phone is still on.
Yeah. And then there was also the time that MTV came to disgrace them.
Oh my God, tell them about that. Tell everybody. Okay. Wait, let's take one more musical interlude here.
All right.
And, we're going to hear some text on the horse heads for this right now, because this just about sums it up.
I'm having a drink, yeah, trying to wallow in my trouble. You came around, my drink they turned to doubles. You say you love me at least 50 times a day. But if you really love me, there's nothing to say. Well, I need the company of no one. Just pack your things, close the door behind you. Cause if you really love me, you just go away. Cause if you really love me, you just go away.
Go away and leave the dirt behind you. I'll be alright, just leave.
And we're to talk about when Steve Olsen, the famous skateboarder and member of the Joneses, was the one I think who got the whole MTV thing set up. So what was the title of it? It was Punks and Posers, right?
Yeah, Punks and Posers.
And it was in 1985. It was an MTV special that featured like all different punk rock venues and clubs in LA, and somehow our house.
Yeah, and they I mean, MTV was new. It was like a blip on the radar. Like, we knew about it, but, you know, there was barely cable TV. There was no cable. There was like, what, the Z channel? Or, you know what I mean? There was nothing. So anyway, yeah, MTV was a big deal. And they came to our house and they brought 18 cases of plain rat beer.
It was Corona.
Okay.
I made them get, because I specified that. And this was like, we specified it had to be that number. That was part of like one of
our rider. That was our rider. Yeah. And so was the cocaine that they brought. No,
the cocaine came later. The cocaine came after. It was so horrifying when the camera got broken in the first scene. That was when the cocaine started. But tell them about the first scene where we drove up in the pink Cadillac.
Okay, the pink Cadillac. How do I describe that?
It was the pink Cadillac from hell. It was
riddled with bullet holes. Riddled with bullet holes.
Technically, it belonged to my bass player, Laura Bennett. It was her brother's car, and he had brought a copy of Hustler magazine into an Earl Scheib auto painting place, opened it up to the centerfold, and pointed to the, you know, centerfold girl's vagina and said, "I want my car painted this color." The guy said, "Okay." And then they tried to like blowtorch the roof off because they wanted it to be a convertible. So everything was going well until the back seat got set on fire. So it didn't have a back seat. And then Laura's brother brought it up to Angeles Crest Forest, and him and his best friend had target practice in it. But then they hadn't hit the gas tank. So then they decided they weren't going to just leave it up there, and they brought it back down and gave it to Laura. And everybody that lived in Disgrace had a key to it.
Owned it.
You could like take it somewhere, like to a party, and then you'd come out 15 minutes later because it was boring and the car was already gone. Like one of the other roommates had like bailed in it. Or sometimes you'd show up somewhere hoping it would be there, and there'd be like someone getting a blowjob in the backseat with
Or I'd be walking over the sound check like at 2 a.m. with Mark down Sunset, and you guys would go by in the pink Cadillac, like barely hanging, like people spilling out loud as hell, and never get pulled over.
I know ever. We used to say it had a force field around it.
Yeah, it had a force field.
The only time it even almost got pulled over was a cop did stop and Stop It on Wilcox near Hollywood. And
the PlayStation?
No, it was north of there. It was near Playmates. It was near Hollywood Boulevard. But we got pulled over and there was like 8 or 9 people in it. And we were all on mushrooms, tripping our brains out. And the policeman strolled up thinking this was going to be a big bust. And he goes up to Marsky, who was the driver. He said, "Can I see your license and registration?" And she was tripping and she couldn't find anything. But she was wearing this like leopard velour cowboy hat. And he said something like, nice hat there. And she said, "Oh, is it becoming?" And he said, "It's very becoming." And she was like, "Becoming what?" And he somehow let her go because she was like fluttering her eyelashes.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna, and even like didn't even I think maybe got a warning, but you know,
slap on the wrist. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so that's how the episode of MTV Comes to Disgrace starts. Yeah. And also they'd already filmed like GBH at I don't even know where, some huge
at the
place.
Olympic Auditorium.
Yeah,
I think.
Thank you. Yeah, it was the Olympic, and so. And they were like interviewing people outside of that show. And then so you guys pull up, there's like, I don't know, 15 people that come flying out of the, as you pull up on the, in the driveway of Disgrace on you, just all come.
Oh, for the opening yeah. scene of MTV.
Yeah.
And the last thing the guy said was, "Be careful, this is a $16,000 camera." And he had the camera. He was sitting on the back of where the back seat was, holding the camera up. And Laura was so drunk, she was trying to park the car and she smashed into the car that was parked in front of her.
And that's on film. That's on film.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you guys roll out of the car, you roll onto the porch, and it's a huge party scene. And, you know, we give them a tour. We take them on a tour through the house. We go, you know, we're like, you don't want to go in the kitchen. Even the cats won't go in there. And then we get to the bathroom, which we called it, you know, the Andy Warhol bathroom, because a lot of drugs happened in that bathroom.
Yeah.
And then we got into my room where we filmed you and me. And you and I made this pact. We're like, okay, we're not going to drink until the cameras are gone. And of course, that just went right out the window.
Hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, it's fast.
Because
and
before they even started filming, we were all shit-based.
Yeah. And so you can YouTube that. It's there. It's there on YouTube. You can totally see that.
Just look for Punks and Posers on YouTube and you'll see Iris and I slurring our way through poetry and smashing into the neighbor's car.
That might be the only moving footage of Disgraceland, yeah? Except for the running kind. What? The running kind that you and Max. Yeah.
The running kind, which is also on YouTube, was co-written by Max Tash and me, and it was about an all-girl band. It was filmed on location at Disgraceland, at Raji's, at the Palace on Vine, which is now Bardot, at an after-hours club. And it's got like anyone that was anybody in the punk rock scene in the 80s in it. It's free on YouTube. It's called The Running Kind. It's got Tex and the Horseheads. It's got TSOL. It's got El Duce from the Mentors. It's got
El Duce
in it. And lots of people doing lots of horrifying things that were really real and people thought we made up for the movie.
Yeah, we weren't acting. Okay. it could have been considered reality, but it was
that was a great reality show.
It was a great movie. Well, yeah, just their trip to Disgraceland was total reality.
I made Steve Olsen get the producer in there, and I was like, "Do you know where to get any blow?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Buy us some." He did, because I think he thought it was going to sober us up, and it just made matters worse.
That was awesome.
Statute of limitations.
That was awesome. Yeah.
So you've lived in some other houses and done some other crazy shit. Do you want to talk about any of that from the olden days?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
talk about like Border Radio or any of the movies.
Okay. Another movie that has footage of Disgraceland, because Border Radio was shot in my bedroom at Disgraceland.
Yeah.
So, and that was a lot of fun. That was great fun. And they actually, Allison Anders discovered me in a complete Hollywood kind of discovery kind of way. I was the to-go girl at Duke's at the underneath the Tropicana Motel, which is, you know, was rock and roll central with the late 70s and through the early 80s in Hollywood. Like anyone who was anyone touring band stayed there and probably ended up living there. And so I was the to-go girl at Duke's, and they would come in every day and they finally just said, hey, we want you for this movie. And it was Border Radio, and it was, you know, who knew that it would become a cult classic. But so they came and they filmed it in my room, and in the movie I'm drinking 10 high, and I'm really drinking 10 high. Yeah. So yeah, that was, and also
that was method acting.
Yeah.
Hi, Allison.
Oh, but you know what I need to say that I did? Yeah. Hi, Allison. We love you. So when I was, so after Border Radio, you know.
I mean, who else was in Border Radio? Tell everyone.
John Doe, Dave Alvin, Chris D, Texacala Jones, Julie Christensen, Green on Red. There was another band. What was their name? Yeah, that was a great movie. It's also a great movie. Not only does it show my bedroom at Disgrace on, but it shows all these places in Los Angeles that aren't there anymore. I mean, it really, it's like a love letter to Los Angeles. I love that movie. Yeah. And I mean, before I lived at Disgrace on, I lived in a place called the Pink Mansion, which is the name of my next book, and I'm writing about it. And that was very crazy, but nothing's ever going to top Disgraceland. Nothing. That was, you know, where do you go after Disgraceland? Except maybe a rehab or a mental institution, which I think I did go to rehab after Disgraceland. Yeah, many times. Yeah, everybody.
Even Amy Winehouse would have gone to rehab.
Yeah,
willingly.
She was sick.
She would have been with us.
Yeah, there would have not been none of that. I don't want to go. It would have been like, take me to rehab. Yeah, that was, you know, literally Disgraceland could have been a way station to rehab.
We could have, nowadays we could have been getting paid for it.
Yeah.
By the state or something.
Yeah. We could have just had a shuttle there taking people to cry out. I want to talk about the first time I met Steve-O.
Oh, okay. Steve-O from the Vandals.
From the Vandals, the singer of the Vandals. I love Steve-O and I miss him, dude.
Yeah.
He was funny. He was great. And okay, so Pleasant picked me up from the hospital, and we get home, and there's the, as always, the porch was just filled with all these people, these dudes, you know, all these guys drinking and partying. And we walk up, and Steve-O, who I'd never met before, is like, hey, you want a beer? And I'm like, no, I'm just coming from the hospital. And Pleasant says to him, yeah, she just had an abortion. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. Do you want some acid? And that was how I met Steve-O. And then we became great friends after that. Steve-O was one of my favorites. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, Steve-O was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, although we could probably go on and on and on again.
Yes, I know.
But we are going to leave you guys now. That was the fabulous Iris Berry, my dear lifelong friend, my really talented friend, my really motherfucking crazy badass bitch friend.
It takes two, babe.
It is babe, isn't it? Iris and I got fake engaged to each other on Facebook years ago, and I think 2021 might be the year to make honest women out of each other.
I'm in. I'm down. As long as you put me on your insurance. No. Thank you for having me. This has been awesome. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah, we will do this again. All right, you guys. We love you so much.
Mwah.
Mwah.
The Devil's Music is written and hosted by Pleasant Gaiman. Produced by Aaron Alden. All sound design by Jerry Danielson of Busy Signal Studios. and of course, is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at pantheonpodcasts.com. Our social presence is at Pantheon Podcasts on Facebook and Instagram. Tweet us at Pantheon Pods. All songs can be found wherever you get great music. Please pick up these important and fantastic tracks.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.